Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
It's a Wednesday. What the heck is Jack Lancaster doing here on the Andy Griffin Show?
Are you
Jack?
Sure it's not Monday?
I thought it was Wednesday, man. You're not supposed to be here.
Well, I was out of town Monday.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm just saying.
Glad you had me on a Wednesday anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a beautiful morning.
It's cold, you said.
It's chilly.
I haven't been outside for a few hours, so.
I had to wear my coat.
Yeah, you have.
I could see my breath when I went out to my car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I swear we went right from summer, 90, to winter with nothing in between.
Right. We do that weird sometimes. Yeah. So weird. I know.
Welcome, everybody, to the Andy Griffin Show on this hump day, Wednesday. We are 6 days out from the day they count our votes. Now, most of us have had them already for a week or two.
And
a lot of us have already voted.
Yeah.
Have you voted already?
No. My wife and my daughters are sitting on our kitchen table and mine, and we're going to have all hands on deck voting session.
Nice.
In the kitchen table, probably tonight or tomorrow night, and then we're going to drop them off.
This is interesting. As a married couple, do you kind of commiserate together and go, all right, look, if you vote for this person, I vote for this one, we're going to cancel each other out, so let's try to kind of vote for about the same people?
Well.
Yeah. He's smiling.
Yes. Put that one way.
Okay.
I have the burden, if you want to call it that, of not like the president ticket, because my wife is up on presidential politics, but I try to get schooled up on all the state and the local races and everything else on the line. And then so I say, okay, now we're going to vote here. We kind of vote as a family block, put it that way.
No, that's a good thing. Yeah. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I mean, a cynic would go, well, you're forcing them to your...
No,
I don't think it's that at all.
No, they sign their own name. I fill it out for them. Just kidding.
Today, a couple things I wanted to talk about. First of all, tomorrow's Halloween. Fred Walker is going to come on the show and do what has become a tradition. He's going to do a live version of Monster Mash.
Fun story.
He is good. He's good.
By the way.
Yeah.
He does Monster Mash live. Oh. I heard that song yesterday in Walmart.
Yeah, he sings it as good as Boris Pickett sang it. I mean, he's good.
Really?
I have one line in the song. You know, where Dracula rises up and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist? Uh-huh. That's my line in the
song. Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
Yes, I've been practicing that. Okay. I didn't want to do it right now because it's tomorrow and I don't want to preempt myself.
Okay, okay.
Did you have a Fred story?
Yeah, so I have two sisters live in Bloomington.
Okay.
And they have a neighbor. This is a true story. His name is Freddy Krueger.
No.
Yes, and guess what? He used to live next door to
Fred Walker,
Wes Craven.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not kidding. Yeah,
really?
And the guys, well, whoever wrote the Halloween stories, and he said, "Can I use your name?" You go, yeah, sure. He never got anything for it, but he's the guy whose name was used for Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh,
Fred really? Krueger, Freddy Krueger. Yeah.
So they borrowed his name.
Yeah.
Well, he gave permission to use his name.
There's really a Freddy Krueger lives here in St. George, in Bloomington.
That's crazy.
And he's the guy.
That's crazy.
Now,
I actually get asked often, were you named after Andy Griffith? And my parents had no idea who Andy Griffith was when they named me.
Really?
In 1966. I mean, I was named Andrew after my grandpa. So, you know, Andrew Allen. And so to me, it was like, you know, not.
Did you grow up watching Andy?
I did. Oh, I loved the Andy Griffith Show. Yeah.
Still my
but favorite. I was embarrassed for a long time about my name being the same, because that's the first thing people would say. And when you're, you know, 10 years old or whatever, oh, you're the Andy Griffith. You know, now I like it because he was a good guy.
Yeah.
And he taught some good lessons.
At least your name wasn't Barney Fife.
Yeah. Or Jeffrey Dahmer or something. I mean, it could have been a lot worse, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are some bad names out there.
John Wayne Gacy. So. That was funny.
My dad was a bishop for a while in West Jordan, and he had at one point a counselor named Joseph Smith.
Oh, wow.
He went by Jody, but yeah, Joseph was his real name, and John Taylor was in the Bishop Brick as well.
Oh, my goodness.
Snow Canyon has a football player named Joseph Smith.
Well, when I lived in Ivins, our stake, one of our stake counselors was Joseph Smith, and his dad was Hiram.
Really? His dad was Hiram?
Well, the one that invested out there and did the Franklin, was it the Franklin Planner? Franklin Planner. Yeah, that one. But yeah, great, great, great grandson of Hiram, and Franklin his son was Covey, he named his son Joseph. Yeah.
Okay. Really cool. Really cool. I was reading the story, Jack, and I know you're a fan of history, but this guy Paul is his name. I've conversed with Paul a few times, but he writes for a website called FreeMansPerspective.com. But he was writing about life 119 years ago in 1905.
Okay,
and he said, everybody thinks about life in the early 1900s as being absolutely miserable. It was so hard. It was, and he said, Americans have a complete, utterly wrong, really a misconception about the time. So life was actually in the early 1900s was actually really good. Now, of course, you have the Depression coming up and World War One, and some stuff happens to change that. But in 1905, and he said he had an uncle who was alive in 1905. He was a little kid. He said, "Man, life was an oyster, man." I mean, you and he described something. First of all, and this is important to note, Jack. In 1905, there was no income tax. There was no sales tax. There was a property tax, but it was minuscule. It was like, 0.05%. I mean, it was really small. So the money you made, even though maybe it wasn't a lot of money compared to now, it was yours. You took home 99% of your paycheck every single month.
Yeah.
Pretty big deal. So he said the average salary for a man who worked full time, and most women didn't work outside of the home at this time, but in the average salary in 1905 was $700.
Okay.
And he said the
was
average
that annual
$700 a month.
A month.
$700 a year. Maybe let me look at it.
It was a year.
It was a year. It's probably a year. Yeah. Yeah. Annual income $700. There it is. The annual expenses. So to buy food, this was if you didn't live on a farm. And remember, a lot of Americans lived on a farm, right. So they actually grew their own food.
Yeah.
But these are for average expenses if you did not live on a farm, so you had to buy groceries and things like that, was $350. The average tax is about $1 a year, $1 to $5 a year for your property tax. There was, again, no income tax, no sales tax, and none of those kinds of taxes. Yeah. Now, there was no Social Security back then.
Right.
So when you got to retirement, if you didn't have any money, then, you had to rely on your family or whatever to take care of you. But if you think about that, the average expenses were $350. The average salary was $700. Half of your money was...
Went to feed yourself.
It was extra money. It was savings. It was...
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, the $350 included food.
Oh, and that included housing and...
Yeah, everything. Okay. Rent, everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was all included in there. And so Americans were taking home half of their food and or half of their money. So if you think about, there's no Social Security, what would I do without money? Well, if you were making double what you actually spent every month, okay, no big deal if there's no Social Security, right?
Right.
I mean, you not only would you have excess money when you got to the point of retirement, but you would, your family would have plenty of money to take care of you as well. So I just thought it was really fascinating in looking at these raw numbers. Now, of course, life isn't perfect. I mean, the age, the lifespan of a human was 20 years less than it is now.
Like in the late 40s.
Yeah.
Average.
Yeah.
There's a high infant mortality.
Yeah. It went way down and there wasn't access to health care. And so, but they had heated homes. They had electricity at this point. They had refrigeration where they could, keep their food cold or their drinks or whatever. Life was pretty good in 1905.
Well, my mother was born in 20. My dad was born in 1920. My mother's born in 1924. And my mother told me she grew up here in Middleton. She said they had to get the Sears and Roebuck catalog to take to the outhouse.
Yeah, that's right.
That was they couldn't afford toilet paper, so they took the Sears and Roebuck catalog with them. her idea of dessert was bread and milk.
Yeah,
that was dessert.
They did have sugar, so they might throw some sugar on the bread and milk.
But no, was it bread milk. Yeah, okay. She broke up pieces of bread and put it in her milk and ate it like that.
So my,
it was a different world, you know. I mean, I don't know if I'm a fan of an outhouse, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You know? How are you gonna read out there, right?
Yeah, you know, you got the Sears and Roebuck catalog, but then you got to use it. Every day there's a page or two missing, right?
I was reading that.
Well, you can have it back if you want to. No, I'm not going to go diving for that.
So he compared it to modern times. This is 2022. The average single income family was $50,000. Most households are two income families now, but the average single family income was $50,000. If you look at the expenses now, we pay, when you add up all the taxes and this includes Social Security and all that stuff, about 50% of that $50,000 is already gone. Yeah,
sales taxes and everything.
Yeah. And then you throw in, okay, I got a mortgage, a car payment, I got utilities, food, of course, I have to buy. That's the rest of your $50,000 is gone. And that's if you have it's just you and the wife, maybe, or one kid. And it's no wonder you look at things and you go, okay, why aren't we saving money? I did an article day before yesterday about Americans are dipping into their rainy day funds, the savings, more now than ever in the history of our country. And it's because of those numbers right there.
Right.
When you get to the end of the month, all the money's gone. You don't have money to save. Not only do you not have money to save, but you don't have money to even make it all the way. So, you know, I mean, there was a point in my life where we had to decide, okay, which bills are we going to pay this month? And you know, what is closest to being shut off or whatever. You know, when we were newlyweds, we were so poor.
Yeah.
I was going to college and working three jobs and just trying to had a little baby at home, just trying to make ends meet. It was tough.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and of course,
but, you know, I've thought about this quite a bit, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mother and my father both grew up in homes where they had, my father had seven brothers and a sister, and my mother had eight brothers and sisters, and they lived in a two bedroom house. Mm. So think about,
We have to have
a three bedroom, two bath house minimum.
Yeah.
I mean, the first house I ever bought was a three bedroom, two bath house.
Yeah.
So, you know, mom was home back in those days. She was home taking care of the family because she had a lot of kids. So she didn't have time to go out and get a job. But the house was a lot smaller, therefore a lot less money compared to the amount of proportion to what we have today.
Right.
So, you know, both of us are working, you know, my wife and me, you and your wife. But you're paying for a much bigger house compared, you know, you're not paying for a one bedroom house with, you know, five kids to grow up in, or two bedroom house. So there's a difference there.
We had, you know, our first house was a three bedroom and we had three kids at the time. Mm-hmm. So one bedroom for the parents, and then the two younger boys had to share a room.
Right.
And I remember, gosh, when I was a kid, everybody shared rooms, you know. I guess it's that old conundrum, Jack. We want our kids' lives to be easier and better than ours were.
Uh-huh.
In doing so, we've kind of ruined the kids a little bit in that they expect that now.
Uh-huh.
And then they even have that desire for their lives to be even better than what, you know, their kids' lives to be even better what theirs was. And then you end up with kids that, you know, live in the basement till they're 32 playing Xbox all day long and stuff. So frustrating. But the other thing that Paul Rosenberg wrote about was one of the coolest things, though, about 1905. He had an uncle that was alive in 1905, I mentioned earlier, but he said you felt like the world was on the edge of possibilities.
Right.
There was so much up ahead. And, of course, electricity was brand new. You know, within, you know, 10 years is when the average American was finally really starting to get electricity all throughout their house. Refrigeration was fairly new. And they really were on the cusp of what we take for granted now. Mm-hmm. But it makes me kind of wistful for
I think what I would miss from that is the innocence. Because the world had not been exposed to fascism and Nazism yet. The world had not experienced the Great Depression yet. I know World War One came along. What was that in the teens? The 1911, 12, 16,
right? Yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah. And that was a big thing. But you know, we had newspapers that printed the week news that was a week old, and you know, so you just didn't have what we have now. I think, gosh, like today, it seems like we're just so bombarded with everything all the time.
Yeah,
you know, and all the bad news, which is kind of what tends to make the print, but. But I, as you're talking, it reminds me of that movie Somewhere in Time with, remember Christopher Reeve?
Oh, yeah, I love that.
You know,
film,
where he goes
yeah.
back to the 1911 or something. And
then
that.
He finds a penny in his pocket.
Yeah.
Ruined everything. Dang penny.
I know. Smashed his delusion.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, but you know, the genteel time, if you will, and mm-hmm. an age of innocence, which we kind of all longed for when we were children and before the world smacked us upside the head, you know. But, you know, we always look back with fondness. We never look back and see the, you know, the everyday-to-day grind of what's going on. I mean,
true.
I mean, for
they
me,
worked
a, hot,
hard.
A hot shower like this morning was an amazing experience, you know.
Yeah.
And I know on my Mother's Day, when she was a child, they didn't have hot showers.
No.
You know, they bathed once a week in the wash basin.
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
With the bathwater, yeah. Yeah.
The babies always were last, weren't
uh-huh.
they?
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
Which is kind of disgusting if you think
about
it.
I know.
A little bit. I wanted to switch topics real quick and ask you about something. This is, to me, this is unconscionable what Kamala Harris and some of the people are saying. So they're comparing the things they're saying, calling Trump a fascist and bringing up the word Hitler.
Uh-huh.
There are people, Jack, on the fringe of sanity
uh-huh.
out there that are going to hear those words. Like we already saw twice, maybe a third time, and they're going to say, well, you know what? If I go kill that guy that's a fascist, that's like Hitler, I'll be a hero. That in their twisted little, you know, having a hard time hanging on to sanity mind, they think if I go kill that guy, everybody will love me because yeah. I killed the fascist.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of inflammatory speech really, really bothers me, Jack. I get it.
I watch The Five almost every night. I really like Greg Gutfeld. He's smart. He's so witty on his commentary.
Mm-hmm.
He said the other night, he says, you know, if Trump's really a fascist and a Nazi and Hitler, then it's your obligation to make the guy go away. Your obligation to take him out no matter what. Because how can you allow him to take office if he wins?
Right.
You can't allow that.
Right.
You know? And so
people are going to act on that.
I believe so, you know.
Yeah.
And that just shows me how desperate those guys are, the other side.
It's sad.
So desperate, you know.
It is sad. And you know, they were unbelievably quiet when someone tried to assassinate Trump.
Yeah,
they just
yeah.
kept their mouths shut.
They just kind of swept it under the rug, so did the media.
And then for a week, maybe, they didn't say things like fascists.
Yeah, for a whole week.
And then after about a week, it all came out again,
yeah.
and they started saying it again, and I just really believe there are going to be more attempts on Trump's life, and I hope they got him protected really,
yeah.
really well.
Yeah.
Because
no, I would bet money there's going to be a few more that we hear about.
That's yeah.
going to even possibly some close calls, and hopefully they don't succeed. But it's amazing the rhetoric they're using on that. It's just amazing.
It's just
you can't allow. Hey, you know, if you could go back in time and kill baby Hitler, would you do it? You know. Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of where they're justifying it now. How can you let a Hitler take office? He's going to, I mean, the nonsense that they're saying what he's going to do
yeah.
is just so unbelievable.
It's crazy to me to think they're saying, well, he's a fascist and he's not never going to leave office. He's going to change our government.
As if the guy had never been president
yeah,
before.
Exactly.
And we don't know what the presidencies are going to be about. Which is, and it's so insulting to people with a brain.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, but I guess the problem is the people that are going to vote on that, based on that, they're not using their brains. I'll say it.
Here's the other thing that is crazy to me. So the liberals, have made it about pro-choice versus pro-life, right?
Mm-hmm.
The abortion issue.
Yeah.
Well, that has nothing to do with this presidential election.
But it doesn't matter to their voters because their voters don't think about it like that.
They I know,
think
but
about,
it,
well, he's the one that got rid of this national abortion right. Actually, not directly.
He didn't have anything to do with it. Really.
Well, no, he got the Supreme Court. He got three picks.
Yeah.
It's the luck of the draw, man.
Yeah.
And you know what? The thing is about Trump that I love about him that none of the other Republican presidents did is when a liberal judge retired or died, okay, Supreme Court justice, then the president would always pick a moderate or slightly left judge, right, even if it was a Republican. But Trump's like, no, we're going to win. We're going to pick someone who's on our side.
Yeah.
And who interprets the Constitution the way it's supposed to be. That's the thing about Trump that's breaking the mold of these rhino type Republicans that we've had for presidents, because when he gets that Supreme Court pick, that's a liberal justice. I think it was Ruth Bader Ginsburg that passed.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, we're going to go for a conservative judge. Good for him,
right,
man.
Right.
Because that's what the left would do.
And absolutely. And back to the whole abortion thing. It didn't say, the judges didn't even say, we're going to ban it now. That's why we're overturning Roe v. Wade. We're going to ban abortion. All they said was, it's not going to be a federal issue anymore. We're going to leave it up to the states. And that's the thing that really, really kind of galls me about this argument about president. Right now, the president, whoever wins, has nothing to say about the abortion issue. It is a state issue, and all the people that are complaining about it and saying, oh, Roe v. Wade, this, guess what? It's still legal in their states. You go to California, guess what? You can still get an abortion. Or Nevada.
Yeah. Right.
And if you don't like the law in the state that you live in, say you live in Utah, but you want free, clear abortions at 7 months, go to California or Nevada. Go somewhere.
Or become a legislator.
Yeah.
Or go, work for the one that wants to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
You're right.
I don't know.
All right, got to check in with weather when we come back, more with Jack. You know, Utah is on the cutting edge of, needing nuclear energy. We'll talk a little bit about that.
Let's go nukes, baby.
Yeah. And people are scared, but they shouldn't be. They really shouldn't. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Tomorrow on the program, Fred Walker is going to join me with what has become a tradition, his live singing of Monster Mash. We could pre-record it, but I'm like, you know what? It's better live. So Fred's going to be on. We're going to sing Monster Mash. He's going to sing it. I'm going to have one line in. It'll be good. And then I figured I'll ask Fred to stay a little while and talk about some things like internet access and stuff.
Ooh.
So, tomorrow is Halloween. I have an article on 890 KDXU. I almost said 590 KSUB. I don't know
Oops.
Why. 890 K. Well, they're one of ours.
The sister station.
Yeah.
Up the road a bit.
890 KDXU about some Halloween safety tips.
Wear black, kids.
I was going to say, it used to be watch out for razor blades and poison in your candy.
That never happened.
It never actually happened. But we don't say don't check your kids' candy because just be careful. But the real danger is, you know, kids wearing dark clothing, darting across the street in front of cars and
On those scooters. Man, I about took fast. One out last year.
Oh, did you?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I was going to a Halloween party and it was in a neighborhood I was unfamiliar with, right? Black, you know, it was like, 8 o'clock at night, so it was dark. Come up to this intersection, there wasn't a stop sign, and I was going to go through it, and these two kids were in black on scooters. I hit the microphone.
You almost broke the microphone, yeah. That's how fast they were going.
And I had to slam on the brakes, everybody hit the dashboard. I almost killed one of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scared me.
The number is sobering. You are a youth, a child, someone under the age of 18 is 6 times more likely to die on Halloween through a traffic accident than any other day of the year.
Oh, yeah. I believe 100%.
Times more likely.
Yeah.
So just be careful out there. As kids or grandkids, you take them out, make sure that they can be seen. And as drivers, a lot of us go to parties on Halloween. Sometimes you have to run to the store, whatever. Just, be real
And
careful.
Some people drink at these parties.
That's true.
And then they drive home.
That's true.
Afterwards.
I it's a Thursday night this year, so I'm thinking maybe not as much of that as normal. But if it were a Friday or a Saturday or even a Sunday. But Thursday night, we all got to get up and go to work Friday morning. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I was going to talk about, so as you get older, especially for guys, it gets harder to get up from a chair. Especially if you're laughing, he knows what I'm talking about.
I've seen you get out of a chair, man.
Especially if you're low down. I like high chairs because you just
fall down out of them.
Yeah, I'm in a truck. My truck is hard to get into.
Uh-huh.
But getting out, man, you just open the door and slide on out. It's beautiful. You're in a standing position. Anyway, I was going to try to think of some ways to help us to maybe answer the door and not have to keep getting up and down. And I couldn't think of too many.
Sit on the porch.
Maybe sitting on the porch would be one. But it's going to be a little bit cold if you're sitting still.
Yeah.
The other one, my strategy been easy. Make my wife answer the door.
Oh, okay.
But that's not really very fair. Yeah. So,
dress up as a big scarecrow and sit there motionless with a bowl of candy in your hand that says, "Take one, please."
And scare them.
And when they take more than one, you go, "Hey." And they freak out.
Grab their hand.
And they think you're not, they don't know if you're real or not.
Grab their hand like a Yankees fan grabbing Mookie Betts' glove, right? Did you see that video?
No.
Holy cow. So last night,
was he catching a fly ball?
Yeah, it was a foul ball down the right field line. Uh-huh. Mookie is the right fielder for the Dodgers. Uh-huh. He goes over right next to the fans and catches the ball.
Uh-huh.
So the ball hits his glove.
Yeah.
These two fans grab his arm, pry open his glove, and knock the ball out while holding his other hand back.
Did he get the catch?
So
did they call it out?
The umpire came over, ruled fan interference, batter is out. And the two fans got ejected.
Good for them.
From the stadium.
Good for them.
Now, the price for a front row World Series ticket, I looked it up today, is about $2,000 a ticket.
Oops.
So those guys got kicked out.
So batter was out, though.
The batter
That's
was
the
out.
Important
the
part.
Yankee batter was out,
right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I watched the video. I actually watched it this morning, and I'm like, that is one of the most New York things I've ever seen. I mean, that is so New York. Yeah, we're going to mug this guy and take his ball.
Yeah.
That is so New York. Yeah. So
those guys.
And I hope they at least got to watch the game, though, in their little Yankee Stadium jail or
in the parking lot on their phone.
Parking lot on their phone. Perhaps. All right, let's talk nuclear energy for just a minute, Jack. Utah is one of four states now that is named as one of the first four. They're calling them test states or, you know, the states that are going to try this first. But there's something called the Idaho National Laboratory Project. It's a nuclear power project. The idea is instead of building big old giant nuclear, I mean, you think Three Mile Island and some of those with the big old cooling towers and all that, they want to build a bunch of smaller. What'd you call them? Modular?
Small SMRs, small modular reactors.
They're modular.
So they can be on a semi-truck.
Yeah.
So you can pull it up and park it in front of your whatever, and it'll give you energy.
So one of the John Curtis, who's one of our congressmen, or House of Representatives, John Curtis, anyway, he said, we're approaching in the state of Utah an energy crisis because the powers that be have made us shut down coal plants, and he said, we're at this point, we're in big trouble. We're getting to the point where we have more demand than we have power. Mm-hmm. He says we got to solve that problem.
Plus, we're exporting power.
Yeah,
to California too. So I went to a party last night.
Yeah,
and I sat next to
Halloween party?
Huh?
Halloween party?
No, it was actually a birthday party.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it was kind of a Halloween theme. It was fun.
All right.
And I sat across the table from a guy who works at the Delta power plant.
Okay.
And we just met last night, and we got talking, and he says, you know, their biggest customer is Los Angeles. So they are decommissioning their coal power up there, and they're going into natural gas. They're building a natural gas plant right next to the coal plant.
In Delta?
In Delta. Okay. And they're going to decommission the coal one.
Wow.
Because the coal one is so, because the energy is so cheap coming out of there. That's why they're decommissioning it, because it's cheap.
Too cheap, huh?
Just kidding. I'm being sarcastic. Yeah. Okay. But LA doesn't want to buy, you know, coal power.
Coal power, right.
But they're also requiring that they do 20% of their energy is derived from hydrogen. And so I ask him, how are you making the hydrogen? He says, oh, we're taking water and we're cracking it and we're making hydrogen out of it. And I says, well, doesn't that cost more energy to make the hydrogen out of water than you get out of it when you burn it back? And he goes, oh, yeah. But that's what they want.
They want. That's California for you.
That's California. Yeah. So the problem is they're gonna produce about half the amount of electricity once it gets up and going than they did with coal.
Yeah, we are, again, an energy, a power shortage is coming.
And there's windmills up there. There's windmills up northeast of Delta.
Okay, I didn't know we had a windmill.
And they have to send power to those windmills all the time to keep them.
Wait, Aren't they supposed to produce power?
No, because the wind doesn't blow that much in those windmills. Oh, they put them in a bad place. Oh, man. He says there's only...
Who's in charge of that?
I don't know. Probably
Obama. Is that a Spencer
Obama.
Cox project?
Sounds like an Obama project. I don't know. But anyway, that's the problem with that. And so nuclear, you know, totally all in on that. Yes.
I was telling you during the commercial break, a lot of people think I hate electric cars. I'm anti-electric cars. I am not anti-electric cars, contrary to what you might have heard or believe. I think that they have a lot of good things about them. But they have some major problems. And we know range has been one of them. They're working on that. They're getting better at extending the range of those. And then charging them.
And time.
If you...
Charging time.
Yeah. If you have an electric car and you plug it into one of their high-speed chargers, the Tesla superchargers, they call them, it still takes you about an hour to charge it to a full charge. Now, I don't know about you, Jack, but I could do a lot of things in an hour that way better than sitting around waiting for my car to charge.
Yeah, yeah.
So they got to fix that. If they can fix that. And so they're the feds are telling us, and heaven forbid if you live in California, you got to have an electric car now. Right.
But don't charge it in the summertime when everybody's doing air conditioning and the forest fires are burning down the power lines.
So if we can find a way, seriously, if we can find a way to charge them.
But everybody's got to have electric cars because by 2035 we can't have gas.
Yeah, nuclear power could be a good answer.
Oh, but
they got to solve the charging.
California's getting rid of their nuclear power plants.
Yeah.
They shut them down except for one.
Yeah. Oh, they're scared. Yeah.
Yeah. Because why are we scared of nuclear power? How many people have died because of nuclear power?
It's a PR problem, really.
Yes, it
nuclear is. Nuclear is a PR problem. We think nuclear, we think, okay, atomic bomb. We think nuclear weapons. We think Cold War.
Okay.
You know, you and I grew up hiding under our desks, you know, having Cold War missile practices and stuff. And so when we hear nuclear power, we think of all that stuff, and we're...
Why?
We're scared. Why? It was conditioned into us, I think. We need to condition it.
But did you know that the amount of deaths per kilowatt, megawatt hour from nuclear power compared to solar, compared to wind, compared to gasoline, diesel, fuel oil, coal, everything else?
It's minuscule.
Minuscule.
Yeah.
I think there's probably been about, when you count, and the Fukushima thing was the earthquake that killed everybody, and it was... When the power plant exploded over there, it wasn't a nuclear explosion. It was a hydrogen explosion because the reactor didn't get shut down properly. But more people died over there because they evacuated a hospital and an ICU unit into a gymnasium because they were worried about fallout, which never came.
Which never came.
And they never happened.
Yeah.
And then Chernobyl, which was a stupid Soviet-style reactor that we don't use here. It had a graphite solid core. We don't use those types of reactors here. And it was a, you know, as in most things Soviet, it was poorly maintained, poorly provisioned, and poorly trained. So, you know, kind of like what's going on in Cuba right now. You know, they don't have any electricity. They're done.
But it's a fear factor is what it is. So I would propose, remember, 2-3 years ago, the Water Conservancy District said, we're using too much water. Let's do a PR campaign and see if people will respond to water conservation. And guess what? It worked.
It worked, yeah.
They blitzed. They had commercials on our station. They added commercials on TV stations.
Yeah.
And people started, I mean, not just a small amount. People were saving thousands of gallons of water every single month just from a simple PR campaign.
Yeah.
So with all the money the feds have and all the money that's out there floating around in the power industry, why hasn't there been a really good PR campaign for nuclear power?
That's a good question, Andy.
Because I think that would turn things around. I think it would.
But they don't want it to turn around. Don't you understand? See, we're idiots.
I wanted to turn
this
around.
Is the conversation I was having last night. Yeah. You're spending excess electricity to turn water into hydrogen so you can burn the hydrogen so California will buy it.
Yeah.
How dumb is that?
I'm really dumb.
Okay, that's because we're stupid. That's because... They haven't taught people, like, conservation of energy. They haven't taught the kids how to, you know, understand what's going on. CO2 is not the boogeyman that everybody thinks it is in this world. You know, our coal plants, we're shutting them down. China's building one a week.
Yeah.
As if that's going to make a difference because the air is universal or worldwide.
Yeah, we found that out with recent.
So what are we going to do? We're hampering ourselves. This is all part of a Chinese propaganda campaign.
Yeah.
Trying to get us to make us weaker. I really believe that. Because we can't be this stupid. We can't. We are dumb.
I think we're stupid.
We're shutting down electricity that's cheap and plentiful and exchanging it for windmills that don't work half the time, for solar power that absolutely doesn't work half the time. And like in Houston or down in Texas where they had that hailstorm, and it took out about, 300 acres of solar plants.
Panels.
It's like, who ever heard of hail in Texas? That never happens. Right?
Yeah.
And then we wonder why we're freezing to death in Texas when the windmills freeze up in wintertime. Imagine that, an ice storm in wintertime.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen. Plus, you're eating up thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of beautiful landscape to put out, solar farms could take 10 or 15 acres or even 20 acres and build a power plant, and that's it.
Yep.
That's my rant for the day.
I like it. It's a good rant. 947 on KDXU. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 951 on KDXU. Jack is whistling. You're pretty good, Jack. You do all right, man. Remember the whistling at the end of the song Centerfold by Jay Giles? That's the one, yeah. The song ends with them whistling. I honestly believe, Jack, there was like a professional whistler out there that would record tracks for these guys.
Yeah.
And I was reading what the album cover on that. This was years ago. This was when I was a DJ at Z104 back in the day. But apparently I think it was the bass player for Jay Giles' band was the whistler
that
song.
Perfect.
And he just stood up and whistled right into the microphone.
Hey, well, some guys got it,
Yeah.
That's right.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. There's a video out there right now. Elon Musk posted it, and so far has 90 million views. 90 million. That would be viral, right?
That sounds viral.
In the video, it shows one of Elon Musk's Cybertrucks beating a Lamborghini in a quarter-mile street race.
Yeah.
When the race starts, the truck pulls out ahead right away with its electric motor, stays ahead, and ends up beating the Lamborghini all the way through the race.
Yeah.
So here's the story on the wire this morning. Elon Musk is using a Virginia street race to praise the speed and power of the Tesla Cybertruck. The tech billionaire shared a video on social media yesterday that shows a Cybertruck lining up for a street race against a Lamborghini on Leesburg Pike in Tysons, Virginia. The Cybertruck powers past the sports car and maintains its lead for the duration of the street race. Musk commented that he believes a Cybertruck could win a race against a Porsche 911 while towing another Porsche 911. Fairfax County police, however, are not amused and are looking into and investigating the video, which was filmed on a street that was a public street.
Okay.
So
that's dangerous. I'm not surprised. Electric is just far superior in acceleration like that.
Vast.
Yeah. I think they're four-wheel drive. They got motors on the front or on each wheel.
I have no idea.
I don't know either, but at least they're, motors in the front, motors in the back.
How many Cybertrucks would you say you think there are in Washington County right now?
I don't know. I see one every day now.
Maybe 10?
I bet five. Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Seems like I see one or two every day.
I don't fault anything about them, the electric motor, whatever, they're like $150,000 now on aftermarket sales, but they sure are ugly, Jack.
Yeah, they are.
They're so ugly.
Yeah.
Somebody put a picture up of a Cybertruck and said, oh, yeah, I remember building this when I was doing the little derby in Cub Scouts, where you curve something out of it.
Pinewood Derby?
Pinewood Derby, yeah.
Yeah.
And basically, that's what I did. You just take a couple of slices off of the block of wood and put wheels on
it. Sure.
That's what the Cybertruck looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very ugly.
I'm glad it's doing well in sales. And this video obviously is doing well. 90 million views.
Well, I'm not surprised again, what I don't like about that whole thing is the government mandates, So let the people decide what they want to buy, I guess Musk, he's taking advantage of the government subsidies, to run his business. And why not? If you're a businessman, you do that. You play within the pool that you're living in. And,
yeah,
one of these days, you know, the technology will get there and it'll make more sense economically speaking and everything to maybe buy electric instead of gas.
Well, and if you think about technology, this is one of the things that I try to stress to people. Look, technology is there for flying cars right now. Is it expensive? Yes. Is it practical? No.
Yeah.
As technology progresses, it will get more practical and less expensive. Yeah. Same with electric cars. Same with almost any technology you can think of. It's there. I mean, if you look at what we have now with these little smartphones we have, and, I mean, 20, 30 years ago, we couldn't even fathom what a smartphone can now do.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it replaces a whole, you know, shopping cart full of electronics.
I was in Salt Lake over the weekend.
Yeah.
And driving up on the freeway up there, which I'm not used to because we live down here, and they got those six lanes each direction,
it's
right?
It's crazy.
It's crazy. So I turned on the adaptive cruise control. I got a 2019 Ford Edge, and it's got lane keeping and adaptive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That thing works really well in that kind of environment. I mean, it just, I set it at, let's say, 75, and the guy in front of me is at 70. It just slows down and keeps that distance.
No, adaptive cruise
keeps me in the lane. You know, tells me to put my hand on the steering wheel because, you know,
do you trust
I'm busy
it?
Texting while I'm driving. No, just kidding.
Do you trust it? That's the only thing I will say because I have the adaptive cruise, and I agree with you.
Well,
it's a great tool, but sometimes it gets a little too close. I'm like, okay, I'm
well, you
put
can
my
adjust the distance.
Right, right, right.
And there was one time when there was a car that was slowing down in front of me that pulled in front of me and slowed way down and kind of cut me off. And then my car really slowed down. And then so I went to change lanes, and another car came into the left. And then it hit the gas because there was a gap.
Yeah.
And then the car hit it, and then it slammed on the brakes, and then it just turned off.
Oh.
So you had to be really...
You scared it.
I scared it, yeah. But then on the way back, we were in this snowstorm and rainstorm, and it wasn't worth the thing.
Oh,
it didn't work at all. In fact, it shut off because it said the sensor got blocked and whatever.
Yeah, you can.
But but up there in that traffic, it was like, you know, this is actually the better way to drive. Because I get nervous and all that with all these cars left and right of me, and I don't like it. I get over to the left lane. I don't care if I'm by myself. I get in that
HOV lane.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here and I ain't moving.
That's right.
Well, you know, truth of the matter is I am almost always with my wife and sometimes a kid or two.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I go up there, I use the HOV lane almost exclusively because rarely am I alone when I go up north.
Right.
In fact, I'm going up Friday to do a football game.
Oh, okay.
And I'll have my wife with me.
Sure.
And we'll just stay in that HOV lane. It's nice.
Yeah. So. But, you know, I guess the market will make it happen. I think it's just silly that again, you know, back to the energy production, you know, you buy an electric car because you're worried about your carbon footprint, when in reality, you got to drive that thing for 10 years on energy that's been produced by either nuclear, hydro, wind, or solar, if you're going to have a neutral carbon footprint on the life of your car.
Or gas or coal.
So you're really not doing what you think you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, so what's the other reason you're buying it? And I think it's really silly that if we buy, you know, if we really care about the environment, okay, let's say we care about the environment. I think everybody does. Then understand what it is that you're doing when you're living your life the way you live it. My thinking is, you know, we came along, you know, God put us on this earth to take advantage of the resources that are under our feet, you know. And if the earth is, you know, 4 billion years old, and in the Cretaceous period, it created, you know, these plants and animals that created coal and oil and natural gas. And then we're here to use it to power our civilization to get us to the next thing. Then so be it. Right. I mean, we're just as part of the natural environment as anything, aren't we?
Oh, you're right. And
so
with the technology, like I said, it's going to get to the point where maybe we can use some of these. Like you said, get us on to the next thing. The next thing's not that far away, but we are so impatient.
Yeah.
Remember how popular the iPod was, and I wanted an iPod so bad.
Oh, yeah.
Now nobody, iPods, it's a joke now. Nobody wants
an app.
Old. Yeah.
Now it's an app.
Yeah.
Now it's your Spotify app.
You know, smartphone and everything, and we're good.
Yeah.
So just be patient.
It sounds better, too.
Technology is coming. I still don't have those ear things. What do they call them? AirPods?
Yeah.
I still don't have
I have the wireless ones.
Yeah.
I use them when I go to the gym.
I need to get that, I guess.
The next big... You'll love them.
We're out of time, Jen.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on a Wednesday.
Fred Walker, Monster Mash. Tomorrow is Halloween. We'll talk to you then.